The Black Cauldron, Chapter 3, Adaon. At first light, the warriors made ready to depart. Taryn hurriedly saddled the gray, silver-maned Melinlas, colt of Gwydion's own steed Melingar. Gurgi, miserable as a wet owl at being left behind, helped load the saddlebags. Dalban had changed his mind about not seeing anyone and stood silent and thoughtful in the cottage doorway with Ilonwy beside him. "I'm not speaking to you," she cried to Taryn, "the way you acted. That's like asking someone to a feast and making them wash the dishes. But, well, farewell anyway," she added. "That doesn't count as speaking." Gwydion leading, the horsemen moved through the swirling mist. Taryn rose in his saddle, turned, and waved proudly. The white cottage and three figures grew smaller. Field and orchard fell away as Melinlas cantered into the trees. The forest closed behind Taryn, and he could see Cair Dalban no more. With a whinny of alarm, Melinlas suddenly reared. As Elidir had ridden up behind Taryn, his steed had reached out her long neck and given the stallion a spiteful nip. Taryn clutched at the reins and nearly fell. "Keep your distance from Islimach," said Elidir with a raw laugh. "She bites. We're much alike, Ismilach and me." Taryn was about to reply angrily when Adaon, who had seen what happened, drew his bay mare to Elidir's side. "You're right, son of Penlarcow," Adaon said. "Your horse carries a difficult burden. So do you." "What burden do I carry?" cried Elidir, bristling. "Last night I dreamed of us all," Adaon said, thoughtfully fingering the iron clasp at his throat. "You, I saw with a black beast on your shoulders. Beware, Elidir, lest it swallow you up," he added, the gentleness of his tone softening the harshness of his counsel. "Spare me from pig boys and dreamers," Elidir retorted, and with a shout urged Ismilach further up the column.
"And I?" Taryn asked. "What did your dream tell you of me?"
"You," answered Adaon after a moment's hesitation, "you were filled with grief."
"What cause have I to grieve?" asked Taryn, surprised. "I'm proud to serve Lord Gwydion. There's a chance to win much honor, more than by washing pigs and weeding gardens."
"I've marched in many a battle host," Adaon answered quietly. "But I've also planted seeds and reaped the harvest with my own hands. I've learned there's greater honor in a field well plowed than a field steeped in blood." The column had begun to move rapidly, and they quickened their steeds' gates. Adaon rode easily and skillfully, head high, an open smile on his face. He seemed to be drinking in the sights and sounds of the morning. While Fludur, Doli, and Cole kept pace with Gwydion, and Elidir followed sullenly behind King Morgant's troop, Taryn kept Adaon's side along the leaf-strewn path. As they spoke together to ease the rigors of their journey, Taryn soon realized there was little Adaon had not seen or done. He had sailed far beyond the Isle of Mona, even to the Northern Sea. He had worked at the potter's wheel, cast nets with the fisher folk, woven cloth at the looms of the cottagers, and, like Taryn, labored over the glowing forge. A forest lore he had studied deeply, and Taryn listened in wonder as Adaon told the ways and natures of woodland creatures, of bold badgers, cautious dormice, and geese winging under the moon. "There's much to be known," said Adaon, "and above all, much to be loved, be it the turn of the seasons or the shape of a river pebble. Indeed, the more we find love, the more we add to the measure of our hearts." Adaon's face was bright in the early rays of the sun, but a trace of longing had come into his voice. When Taryn asked him what was amiss, he did not answer immediately, as though he wished to hold his own thoughts. "My heart will be lighter when our task is done," Adaon said at last. "Ariandlin, my betrothed, waits for me in the northern domains, and the sooner Aron's cauldron is destroyed, the sooner I may return to her." By day's end, they'd become fast friends. At nightfall, when Taryn rejoined Gwydion and his companions, Adaon camped with them. They had already crossed Great Evren and were well on their way to the borders of King Smoit's realm. Gwydion was satisfied with their progress, though he warned them that the most difficult and dangerous portion of their journeys was still to come. All were in good spirits save Doli, who hated riding horseback and gruffly declared he could go faster afoot. As the companions rested in a protected grove, Fludur offered his harp to Adaon and urged him to play. Adaon, sitting comfortably with his back against a tree, put the instrument to his shoulder. For a moment he was thoughtful, his head bowed, then his hands gently touched the strings. The voice of the harp and Adaon's voice twined one with the other in harmonies Taran had never before heard. The tall man's face was raised toward the stars, and his gray eyes seemed to see far beyond them. The forest had fallen silent. The night sounds were stilled. The Song of Adaon was not a warrior's lay, but one of peacefulness and deep joy. And as Taran listened, its echoes rang again and again in his heart. He longed for the music to continue, but Adaon stopped, almost abruptly, and with a grave smile handed the harp back to Fludur. The companions wrapped themselves in their cloaks and slept. Elidir remained aloof from them, stretched on the grounds at the hooves of his roan. Taran, his head pillowed on his saddle, his hand on his new sword, was impatient for dawn and eager to resume the journey. Yet, as he dropped into slumber, he recalled Adaon's dream and felt a shadow flutter like that of a dark wing. Next day, the companions crossed the river Istrad and began bearing northward. With much loud grumbling at being kept from the quest, King Smoit obeyed Gwydion and turned away from the column, riding towards Caer Cadarn to ready his warriors. Later, the pace of the column slowed as the pleasant meadows wrinkled into hills. Shortly after midday, the horsemen entered the forest of Idris. Here, the brown, withered grasses were sharp as thorns. Once familiar oaks and alders appeared strange to Taran. Their dead leaves clung to the tangled branches, and the black trunks jutted like charred bones. At length, the forest broke away to reveal sheer faces of jagged cliffs. Gwydion signaled the company forward. Taran's throat tightened. For a cold instant, he shrank from urging Melinlas up the stony slope. He knew, without a word from Gwydion, that the dark gate of Anuvin was not far distant. Narrow trails rising above deep gorges forced the company to go in single file. Taran, Adaon, and Elidir had been jogging at the head of the column, but Elidir kicked his heels against Islimach's flanks and thrust his way past Taran. "Your place is at the rear, pig boy," he called. "Your place is where you can earn it," cried Taran, giving Melinlas rein to strive ahead. The horses jostled, the riders struggled knee against knee. Islimach reared and neighed wildly. With his free hand, Elidir seized the bridle of Melinlas to force the stallion back. Taran tried to turn his mount's head, but Melinlas, in a shower of pebbles, slipped from the trail to the steep slope. Taran flung out of the saddle, clutched at the rocks to break his fall. Melinlas, more sure-footed than his master, regained his balance on the narrow edge below the trail. Taran sprawled flat against the stones, tried vainly to clamber back to the path. Adaon dismounted instantly, ran to the edge of the slope, and attempted to grasp Taran's hands. Elidir, too, dismounted. He brushed Adaon aside, leaped down, and seized Taran under the arms. With a powerful heave, he lofted Taran like a sack of meal to the safety of the trail. Picking his way toward Melinlas, Elidir put his shoulder beneath the saddle girth and strained mightily. With all his strength, little by little, he raised Melinlas until the stallion was able to clamber from the ledge. "You fool," Taran threw back at Elidir, racing to Melinlas and anxiously examining his steed. "Has your pride crowded all the wits out of your head?" Melinlas, he saw with relief, was unharmed. Despite himself, he glanced at Elidir in amazement, not without a certain admiration. "Never seen such a feat of strength," Taran admitted. Elidir, for the first time, seemed confused and frightened. I did not mean for you to fall," he began. Then he threw his head back and, with a mocking smile, added, "My concern is for your steed, not your skin." "I, too, admire your strength, Elidir," Adaon said sharply, "but it is your shame you proved it thus. The black beast rides in the saddle with you. I see it even now." One of Morgant's warriors, hearing the clamor, had given the alarm. A moment later, Gwydion, followed by King Morgant, strode back along the trail. Behind them hurried the agitated Fludur and the dwarf. "Your pig boy had no better sense than to force his way ahead of me," Elidir said to Gwydion. "Had I not pulled him and his steed back—" "Is this true?" Gwydion asked, glancing at Taran and his torn clothing. Taran, about to answer, shut his lips tightly and nodded his head. He saw the look of surprise on Elidir's angry face. "No lives to waste," Gwydion said. "You've risked two. I cannot spare a man, or I would send you back to Caer Dalban this instant. But I shall if this happens again. And you too, Elidir, or any of this company." King Morgant stepped forward. "This proves what I had feared, Lord Gwydion. Our way is difficult, even unburdened with the cauldron.
Once we gain it, I urge you not to return to Cair Dalvin. It would be wiser to take the cauldron north into my realm.
I think, too, King Morgant continued, that a number of my own warriors should be dispatched to guard our retreat. In exchange, I offer these three, he said, gesturing toward Taran, Adaon, and Eladir. A place among my horsemen when I attack. If I read their first faces well, they would prefer it to waiting in reserve.
Yes, cried Taran, gripping his sword. Let us join the attack.
Gwydion shook his head. My plan shall be as I said it. Mount quickly. We've already lost much time. King Morgant's eyes flickered. It shall be as you command, Lord Gwydion.
What happened? Whispered Fludur to Taran. Don't tell me Eladir wasn't to blame somehow. He's a troublemaker. I can see it. I can't imagine what Gwydion was thinking when he brought him along.
The blame is as much mine, said Taran. I behaved no better than he did. I should have held my tongue.
With Eladir, he added, that's not easy to do.
Yes, the bard sighed, glancing at his harp. I have a rather similar difficulty. Throughout the next day, the company went with greatest caution for flights of Gwythaints. Aron's fearsome messenger birds were now seen against the clouds. Shortly before dusk, the trail led downward toward a shallow basin set with scrub and pines. There, Gwydion halted. Ahead rose the baleful crags of Dark Gate, its twin slopes blazing crimson in the dying sun. Thus far, the company had encountered no Cauldronborn. Taran deemed this lucky, but Gwydion frowned uneasily. I fear the Cauldronborn more when they cannot be seen, Gwydion said, after calling the warriors around him. I would almost believe they had deserted Anuvin, but Dolly brings news I wish I might spare you.
Had me turn invisible and run ahead, that's what he did, Dolly furiously muttered to Taran. When we go into Anuvin, I'll have to do it again. My ears already feel like a swarm of bees.
Take heed, all of you, Gwydion went on. The huntsmen of Anuvin are abroad.
I face the Cauldronborn, Taran boldly cried. These warriors can be no more terrible.
Do you believe so? Gwydion replied with a grim smile. I dread them as much. They're ruthless as the Cauldronborn, their strength even greater. They go afoot, yet they are swift with much endurance. Fatigue, hunger, and thirst mean little to them.
The Cauldronborn are deathless, Taran said. If these are mortal men, they can be slain.
They're mortal, Gwydion answered, though I scorn to call them men. They are the basest of warriors who have betrayed their comrades, murderers who have killed for the joy of it. To indulge their own cruelty, they have willingly chosen Aron's realm and have sworn allegiance to him with a blood oath even they cannot break.
Yes, Gwydion added, they can be slain. But Aron has forged them into a terrible brotherhood of killers and given them terrible power. They rove in small bands, and within those companies, the death of one man only adds to the strength of all the rest.
Shun them, Gwydion warned. Do not give battle if it's possible to avoid it. For the more you strike down, the more the others gain in strength. Even as their number dwindles, their power grows.
Conceal yourself now, he ordered. Sleep. Our attack must be tonight.
Restless, Taran could barely force himself to close his eyes. When he did, it was in light, uneasy slumber. He woke with a start, groping for his sword. Adaon, already awake, cautioned him to silence. The moon rode high, cold and glittering. The warriors of King Morgant's train moved like shadows. There was a faint jingle of harness, the whisper of a blade drawn from its sheath. Dolly, having turned himself invisible, had departed toward the Black Gate. The Dark Gate. Taran found the bard strapping his beloved harp more securely to his shoulders.
I doubt I'll really need it, Fludur admitted. On the other hand, you never know what you'll be called on to do. A flam is always prepared.
Beside him, Cole had just donned a close-fitting conical helmet. The sight of the stout-hearted old warrior and the cap, hardly seeming enough to protect his bald head, filled Taran suddenly with silence and sadness. He threw his arms around Cole and wished him good fortune.
Oh, my dear boy, said Cole, winking, never fear. We'll be back before you know it.
Then aft to Cair Dalvin, and the task is done.
King Morgant, cloaked heavily in black, halted at Taran's side. It would have done me honor to count you among my men, he said. Gwydion's told me a little of you. I have seen you for myself. I'm a warrior and recognize good metal. That was the first time Morgant had ever spoken directly to him. Taran was so taken back with surprise and pleasure, he could not even stammer out an answer before the war leader strode away on his horse. Taran caught sight of Gwydion astride Malingar and ran to him.
"Let me go with you," he pleaded again. "If I was man enough to sit with you in council and to come this far, I'm man enough to ride with your warriors."
"Do you love danger so much?" asked Gwydion. "Before you are a man, you will learn to hate it. Yes, fear it, too, even as I do." He reached down and clasped Taran's hand. "Keep a bold heart. Your courage will be tested enough." Disappointed, Taran turned away. The riders vanished beyond the trees, and the grove seemed empty and desolate. Melinlas, tethered among the other steeds, whinnied plaintively.
"This night will be long," Adon said, looking intently past the shadows at the brooding heights of Dark Gate.
"You, Taran, shall stand first watch, Elladir second, until the moon is down."
"So you shall have more time for dreaming," Elladir said with a scornful laugh.
"You'll find no quarrel with my dreams tonight," replied Adon good-naturedly, "for I will share the watch with both of you. Sleep, Elladir," he added. "Or if you will not sleep, at least keep silent."
Elladir angrily wrapped himself in his cloak and threw himself on the ground near Islimach. The roan whickered and bent her neck, nuzzling her master. The night was chill. Frost had begun to sparkle on the dry sedge, and a cloud trailed across the moon. Adon drew his sword and stepped to the edge of the trees. The white light caught his eyes, turning them brilliant as starshine. He was silent, head raised, alert as a wild creature of the forest.
"Do you think they've gone into a new vignette?" Taran whispered.
"They should soon be there," Adon answered.
"I wish Gwydion had let me go with him," Taran said with a certain bitterness. "Or with Morgant."
"Do not wish that," Adon said quickly. His face held a look of concern.
"Why not?" asked Taran. "I would have been proud to follow Morgant. Next to Gwydion, he's the greatest warlord in Prydain."
"He's a brave and powerful man," Adon agreed, "but I'm uneasy for him. In my dream, the night before we left, warriors rode a slow circle around him, and Morgant's sword was broken and weeping with blood."
"Perhaps there's no meaning in it," Taran suggested, as much to reassure himself as Adon.
"Does it always happen? That your dreams are always true?"
Adon smiled. "There's truth in all things if you understand them well."
"You never told me what you dreamed of the others," Taran said, "of Cole or good old Dolly, or yourself for the matter."
Adon did not reply, but turned again and looked toward Dark Gate. Unsheathing his sword, Taran moved worriedly to the edge of the grove.